Hello, this is Brian Madden, and you're listening to Brian Madden Live. Today's show is a recording of a speech I gave at the Tysons Corner Marriott on August 18, 2005. My topic was Citrix and VMware, how these two technologies work together today, and the larger role that virtualization will play in the future.
So this whole virtualization thing is actually really interesting, because does anyone remember Citrix at iForum? I think it was 2003. So we're talking pushing 2 years ago. So VMware, IBM, and Citrix got together and had this big push, this big press release at iPhone, where they said, you know, the three of us, so IBM, Citrix, VMware, we're all together. VMware is the way to go. You can buy these big IBM servers, put all your Citrix servers on these things here, use VMware, and it's easier to manage and all this kind of stuff. And so that's what's really got the ball rolling in people's minds as far as thinking, hey, this is interesting. You know, I have these Citrix servers. I mean, one of the big pluses of using VMware or any virtualization technology is about consolidation. And almost by definition, what do your Citrix environments look like? One U. You've got 10 servers in this silo and 15 servers in this silo and all this kind of stuff. Now, one could argue that managing these servers, even though you have 10 servers per silo, you're kind of not really managing 10 servers. I mean, yes, you are, but there's things like, you know, SMS and SUS and managing these metaframe servers as farms, things like that, that you don't really have to do too much stuff on a server by server basis. But sure, I mean, who wouldn't rather, I mean, you know, the choice is to, here's two servers or 10 servers, you know, I choose two. Notwithstanding the issues with scalability and or with failover and percentages of users lost and that kind of thing. See, what's interesting, of course, with Citrix, probably everyone here knows this, Citrix can only scale up so far. And in today's world, that typically is about a dual processor, 4 gigs of RAM box. That is to say, if you can fit maybe you can put 50 users on a single processor, 2 gigs of RAM box. Maybe you can put 90 users on a dual processor, 4 gigs of RAM box. If you go to quad processor, 8 gigs of RAM, though, you might only get 120 users. And that box is probably twice as expensive, if not more, than two dual CPU servers. And so the reasons for this are many, and we can certainly go as deep as you want to. It has to do with sort of architectural limits of Windows and how memory mapping works and, you know, all these page table entries and SMB cache and things like this. And again, anyone who wants to dig deeper into that, we certainly can. But the point is that Windows, a terminal server or a Citrix environment, is just really a very busy server. And when you have 90 users on a server, I mean, you're maxing out the CPU, you're maxing out the memory, you're maxing out the sort of the architectural limits of the virtual memory manager, registry, all this kind of stuff. And it just flat out sort of won't scale larger than that. And that of course, is why we build these 1U pizza box of stacks or even blades for our Citrix environments, as opposed to building 4-ways. Now, what's interesting, 64-bit changes that game altogether. There is always anecdotal cases. So when I say like this, there's always some smart ass that's like, I got 400 users on my 8-way, and I'm sure you do. And so what I'm saying is not sort of edict. But in general, with our applications, as we're using them, about a 2-way, 4 gigs of RAM is about as high as we can scale. Okay.
Is that a limitation of the Citrix or terminal service?
This is more of a Windows architectural limitation.
And that was overcome in Windows 2003.
I don't know if I would agree with that. Windows 2003 does do a lot of things to increase the number of users you can put on a system. I mean, first of all, everyone knows that whole kernel memory versus user memory thing. You know, there's Windows has a 32-bit memory address. 2 to the 32nd power is 4 billion. So there's only 4 billion memory addresses that Windows can use. Half of them are for the kernel, half of them are for the application. This is what Windows, they decided, you know, when they wrote it in the early 90s. So Windows 2003 is still a 32-bit operating system. So fundamentally, that doesn't change too much. But what's interesting is as you put more and more and more memory into a server, that 2 gigabytes of kernel space, it does not change. Like, yes, I've got room for more applications and more users and that kind of stuff, but the kernel space, which is sort of the operating system type stuff, That doesn't change at all. Well, for example, in Windows 2000, the registry is stored in kernel memory. This is why Windows 2000 has a registry size limit. You know, you can right-click on my computer and change the registry size limit, but it's actually stored in the kernel memory. And so why is that important to us? Well, how about user profiles? Remember, every single user who is using a server has their profile loaded in HKEY users, as you see all the SIDs for all those users. Well, you got a lot of users and rowing profiles, and you know, I mean, users could be a couple megabytes of profile each. You could actually run out of registry space. And of course, in Windows 2000, it allows you to make the registry bigger and bigger, although you can only go up to about 180, 190 megabytes. The reason for that is it's coming out of that kernel space. You only have 2 gigabytes to begin with. There's no way they're letting you have more than about, you know, 200 megs or so for your registry. So Windows 2003, the registry is not stored in kernel memory, it's stored in user memory. So you'll notice, if you try to change the registry size limit in 2003, that option is just flat out not there. There is no size limit. So what's interesting here is that A, this means now our registry can grow larger than 192 megabytes, which, if that was our bottleneck, that means we can get more users on a Windows 2003 box. But B, the other thing is that 200 megabytes of kernel memory that we were sort of wasting on the registry is now wide open. It actually only uses 4 megabytes for the registry, regardless of how big it is. So what's interesting is it's not that Windows 2003 sort of per se has a fundamental change in architecture that allows us to put more users on the box. It's things like that registry where it's stored that allow us to, now the registry is no longer a bottleneck. Everyone has heard of page table entry, maybe not, but a lot of people here have heard of this page table entry problem. I won't kind of go into the details of what a page table entry is, but needless to say, Windows 2000, the kernel memory, 2 gigabytes, it had a maximum page table size of 660 megabytes. The page tables, this is what keeps track of what processes have which addresses in which virtual memory and page file and all over the place. So this is kind of like our telephone directory of who's using what memory-wise. And it keeps that information in this 660 megabyte page table size. Well, what was happening on really busy terminal servers, really busy Windows 2000 terminal servers, is there are so many users and so many processes and so much memory being used that we were running out of index space where we couldn't actually track who was using what anymore. Even though we might have had 64 gigabytes of RAM in our server, we can't actually track that much RAM because there's so many users on the system. And this is different than a database server, because a database server has fewer processes that are individually using more memory. Here we're talking about lots of processes and lots of users. There's a lot more to track in there. So 2 gigabytes, 660 megabytes of it in Windows 2000 is this page table area. This area in Windows 2003 has been doubled in size to 1.3 gigabytes. What I'm saying is the amount of memory that Windows 2003 can track is now doubled. So what that means is now this page table entry problem is no longer a bottleneck for Windows 2003. However, though, that 1.3 gigabytes in Windows 2003 is still coming out of our 2 gigabyte kernel space. So I'm not saying we can just take all 1.3 gigabytes, because that's leaving only 700 megabytes left for our kernel and file system cache and all these other things. My point being, again, is that Windows 2003 fundamentally has the same architecture as Windows 2000. It's just that many of the common bottlenecks we're hitting, registry size limits, page table entry limits, many of these bottlenecks have been removed. What does this mean, though? We find the next bottleneck. The next bottleneck is SMB open file handles. This is the network drive mapping, how many files can be open over a network drive at any one time from one single host machine. Well, so we're using roaming profiles, we're using home drives, we're using all this kind of stuff, and we're trying to put 400 users on a server. Now we start to hit these limits within Windows. So my point is there's always going to be some kind of architectural limitation. It's just that what that is sort of changes. Now, of course, 64-bit Windows, that completely changes the game. Because now instead of a 2 gigabyte kernel memory area, I believe it's 128 gigabytes. I need to check the chart. But it's bottom line, it's not the bottleneck. That does not mean, though, that we can take a 64-bit Windows server and put, you know, 10,000 users on it, because I'm sure there's some other bottleneck that we're going to hit that we just did not know about. But so all this is just sort of the backstory about why virtualization is an interesting story within the world of Citrix. And the reason I say that is so we all think, I think everyone generally agrees that consolidation is good. I mean, in concept, I'd rather run 10 servers as opposed to 100 servers. everyone can see why the Citrix world has evolved in such a way that we end up with many of these one and two processor servers. So, 1 + 1 = 2003 iForum, VMware, EMC, or excuse me, VMware, IBM, and Citrix getting together to announce this strategy. Now, this was sort of a marketing alignment. What I mean is VMware, Citrix, and IBM, they said, hey, you know what? Everyone wants to consolidate, right? This is what they said. I'm not saying we agree with that. They said, hey, everyone wants to consolidate. They said, you know, you can use VMware to consolidate. Because what's interesting, these limits, I'm talking about kernel memory limits and registry limits, these are sort of Windows architectural limits. What I mean by this is that you may have a server, let's say you build a server with 8 processors and 16 gigabytes of memory. I guarantee you that you won't be able to get any more than maybe 200 users on that server. And you could get many more users if you spent your money building 1U pizza boxes. What's interesting, with those 200 users on that server, you might only see 10% CPU utilization and 15% memory utilization. But again, these architectural limits of Windows, because it's 32-bit addressing and all these other things, that's what's your bottleneck. So I said, okay, let's take a gigantic server, let's take an 8-way, a 16-way server, we'll throw ESX on it, VMware ESX, we'll cut it up into a bunch of one or virtual SMP 2-way servers, and we'll put all of our Citrix users on there. Sounds like a great plan, right? And this is exactly what IBM, Citrix, and VMware were announcing late 2003. Now, what's actually kind of funny about this, the reason this happened is because IBM had a huge, huge over-inventory of those X55, whatever they were, those 4-way and 8-way boxes. And they needed, I mean, I can imagine the boardroom meeting, like, who needs 8-way servers? You know, we've got warehouses full of them. This is the true story. We have warehouses full of these huge servers. What in the hell are we going to do with these things? Because they're just sitting there depreciating. And so they try to figure out, well, let's see, no one can, like, there aren't really that many applications that can truly make use of an 8-way server, apart from a very specific, with databases and that kind of stuff. But that's not going to count for this whole warehouse full of these things. So what can we do for this? And IBM, by the way, if you go back and look through the old Google News sites or Internet Archive, this announcement, this marketing alignment that IBM made with Citrix and VMware, they made with many companies in late 2003. So they were really, really trying to push. Just go back and read all the old press releases. You'll see a marketing alignment, marketing alignment, marketing alignment. I mean, it's with everyone trying to say, pushing it with VMware. And this is before Microsoft would admit that VMware was good and stuff. But so this is something that IBM really tried to push and push towards everyone. And a lot of people, you know, jumped into that, and IBM gave very aggressive pricing. So we have all these 4 and 8-way boxes cut up with all these small pieces. So what's interesting is IBM said, okay, I've got an 8-way server, you put Windows on there, maybe you can support, you know, 200 users. However, if I cut that up into 4 virtual Citrix servers, or maybe 8 virtual Citrix servers, I can probably fit 400 users, which is very, very true. And so it is an absolute fact, make no mistake, I guess a fact if you believe what I say, it's an absolute fact that if you have a big server, I'm going to say 4-way or more, you will get more users, you will get more Citrix users on that server if you cut that server up with VMware. Again, I guess I have to add a footnote, it depends on the applications and there's always exceptions, but in general, that'll always be the case. However, the gotcha is in the price to performance ratio that you get with that. Because these 4-way servers and 8-way servers are ridiculously expensive when compared to these smaller ones. You know, I'm self-employed, which means I'm a Dell customer. So, because I used to work for HP and Compaq, and I was all DL this and, you know, ML that and everything, and then I should have bought my own stuff. Yeah, holy shit, that servers are expensive. And like, you know, like, so, but these Dell servers, you can buy a Dell 1850, dual Xeon, 3 gigahertz, 2 gigs RAM, you know, I think they use SATA and, you know, mirrored by default, but like $2,000. These things are so cheap. And if you want to go to like an 8-way, because I actually looked for my own personal, for our company's data center, we wanted to buy a big 8-way, throw ESX on there, and do everything virtually. The thing is, I couldn't afford an 8-way box. It's like $13,000. When I could build 4 2-ways for like $8,000. And that's almost, half the cost. I mean, it's a little, just a little bit more than half the cost. So again, the issue is, so should you use VMware for your production Citrix servers, as far as to take all these one U's and cut them down into fewer? It kind of depends on sort of what you have laying around in your office. If you have a bunch of eight-way servers laying around, then go for it. If not, though, it probably makes more sense to build these individually. Now, that's sort of a general rule of thumb for your sort of rank and file sort of servers that exist in a silo. But this is not to suggest that there are not a lot of advantages for using VMware and Citrix. And here's where they are. First of all, if you have 1,000 users that need to use a specific application, you're probably going to need 10, 15 servers for that. These are not kind of good candidates to consolidate down. However, what about these one-off applications? And I don't know if we want to go into the whole conversation silo to not silo, AIE versus Softricity versus cutting it up with VMware. That's a whole sort of separate conversation. But what is interesting is, fine, so you've got your corporate apps, you have your sort of enterprise silo, and you need that for a few thousand users. You've got 15 dual processor, one U servers. That's all well and good. Keep those as the one U kinds of things. But then you have Bob from accounting who needs this application. And you've got this one-off, 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 one-off. Of course, in order for redundancy, we have to have two servers for each one. And then we also have the decision, do we put these random one-off applications together on the same server? Do we want to deal with the headaches of that? Do we want to not deal with that? How do we want to deal with that? These are where we get the perfect candidates for using virtualization within a Citrix environment. Even if you don't get quite the same utilization, because with a smaller VMware server, maybe you have a two-way server and you still cut it up into four or five VMs. Even though, yes, in theory, you could put just one Citrix server on the actual hardware itself instead of using VMware, maybe I don't get quite the same performance because I've got the overhead of running five copies of Windows at once. Forget about VMware overhead. It's very slight. It's not even worth considering. But there is overhead about running five copies of Windows on that same physical box. But it may be worth, in terms of headache and time and energy, it may be much better for me if I just say, screw it. There's only five people that need this application. So I take a performance hit because I'm running multiple copies of Windows on the box, I don't care. So maybe I build two ways or two four ways or something like that, and I have a bunch of these sort of random applications. Still part of my same presentation server farm, but I sort of silo them in terms of building these separate applications on separate servers and making that all in VMware. Another thing that's really great for VMware in Citrix environments is all those little kind of supporting servers. So things like the Citrix licensing server, the Microsoft licensing server, perhaps your data collector, depending on how busy your environment is. Perhaps your data store, again, depending on your environment. So a lot of these other things that don't really need, like the Microsoft kernel server licensing server requires almost zero resources. Almost nothing. It just has to exist. But probably your laptop from 1992 would run it fine. And so I tell people, just throw it on some file server or some, just throw it on some random server. Well, the problem is, that's cool for me to say because I don't have a job. But when people actually that have real jobs, kind of like us Citrix people, we can't just go to the Windows guy and be like, hey, kind of like, throw a service on your dim lane controller, or do you mind if I just kind of stick this little database, very small, on your file server? And then it starts to break down. But it pains me for someone to have to spend even $2,000 with Dell. It pains me to have to spend all that money to buy a new server that's just going to sit there and do nothing. But again, must exist. And then also for redundancy purposes. If your Microsoft licensing server goes down, you're screwed. If your Citrix licensing server goes down, you wait 30 days, then you're screwed. So the thing is, in these environments, you can make the redundancy better. There's better sort of advantages for using these little things. The other thing that's really good for VMware and Citrix environments is the one thing that David touched on was these sort of backup silos, or I don't want to phrase it like that. So he talked about clustering, when you can have a bunch of physical servers as a primary node, but have one VMware machine for all the backup nodes. You could do that within your silos within Citrix environments as well. So for instance, maybe for these smaller applications that have just a few users, or you only need one or two servers, maybe you have a VMware server built with all these disk images on it. Perhaps the servers are even powered off, The guest OSs, I should say, are powered off on this VMware box, and it is like an extra sort of load balancing server in the load balancing group. Again, separate Citrix servers for all these, separate farm, they're in the farm membership and everything, but you can sort of use these as backups. So you kind of have like maybe 15 different silos with each their own sets of servers, and your N plus one redundancy is I have one VMware server that is the N plus one for sort of all 15 silos, as opposed to having to build the N plus one redundancy into every single silo itself. So that's certainly a very good use for this. Thoughts or questions so far? I'll wait for you to catch up with the stream of words. Okay, let's talk about ACE. So did you guys get what he was saying about VMware ACE? You know, what this is, it's, think of a disk image on a CD-ROM. I mean, yes, you can do it from a network and everything like that, but think of it, you've got a laptop, and let's say you visit me at my company, and I have a standard image for, you know, the standard consultant desktop on a disk image of a Windows XP workstation wrapped up in this VMware kind of workstation ACE type environment. So I give you the CD, you pop it in your laptop, a little window pops up that, as you said, looks like media player. You see that computer boot, basically, and it boots, and there's your little kind of like virtualized environment. You can have all the certificates on there, you know, the MAC address stuff, whatever you need. And maybe this works where your laptop does not have access to the network, but the little ACE image virtual machine does have access to the network. So that's what ACE is. Now, so where can that be used in terms of Citrix? So what David suggested was put your ICA client on there. And then you can make sure that no one has any inappropriate software, inappropriate network sniffers, inappropriate, you know, things like that. And that certainly is valid. What's worth noting, where these kind of conflicts with VMware, VMware and Citrix have a very interesting relationship, by the way, in that pretty much everyone at VMware used to work for Citrix. So the reason I say this is because publicly, they're very friendly and all this kind of stuff. But there's a lot of kind of stuff. I know there's a lot of people at Citrix that are like, F and VMware, another two employees, you know, how many has it been this week, that kind of thing. But the reason I said, though, that's actually not that bad. Because that means that people who work at VMware have a very good understanding of Citrix and server-based computing in general. And for me, I guess I have to admit that as a sort of a Citrix and server-based computing guy, I kind of view sometimes it's like me versus the world. In the sense of, like, I'm trying to sort of sell everyone on the concept of server-based computing, even within the company and the networking guys and the server guys and all this kind of stuff. So I'm all for ex-Citrix employees just sort of populating the earth. But within VMware, so they kind of thought about a lot of stuff that where they can use their ACE technology and say, we can use this to provide a secure client for you. But what's interesting about that, though, is Citrix used these exact same marketing words, except they're talking about their own product, not VMware's product. So Citrix has this Citrix Access Gateway. And this is something that Frank touched on briefly. Who's using an Access Gateway? I know that Kristen asked that, and I raised my hand. Yeah, this is the hardware appliance, SSL VPN. It's pretty badass. I love it a lot. But I use it internally, but we have no red tape in my company. So I can just buy it and install it. At real companies, you have to get things approved and all that kind of stuff. But if you can manage to do that, the Access Gateway is a kind of cool device. And the Access Gateway, tied in with Presentation Server and the whole Access Suite, it does cool things. Like you visit a web interface site, it analyzes, it looks at your client device, and figures out things like, you know, maybe are you running, what OS are you running, what capabilities do you have, are you on a domain machine or a guest machine, do you have any client certificates, and kind of figure out, it can see, you know, are you running the proper virus software, is it up to date, and all this kind of stuff. So Citrix sort of wants to secure, because remember Citrix's whole marketing stuff now is about access and end-to-end access and infrastructure and all that stuff. Well, they want to secure access from their applications all the way down to the end user client device. And the way Citrix goes about doing that is they say now that the Citrix Access Gateway and the sort of the enterprise version of that, they say it has the intelligence in it to sort of analyze your client device and figure out if it's secure enough or not. And then based on the level of security, you can do different things, or maybe you're in or maybe not, or maybe updating files or whatever. That technology works great, by the way. The VMware ACE technology works great, by the way. And so, complement, like whether these technologies complement each other, I mean, I guess I can kind of see that. It really comes down to sort of philosophically what you want to do in your environment. And there really is no wrong or right answer for this. I mean, if you want to use something like ACE, and where you give a CD, or people can, consultants can access it online and sort of download on demand and use this kind of stuff. If you want every person that walks in the door, say, bring your own laptop, and here's a DVR or whatever of your image, and it's ready to go, and you access your stuff. If that's what you want to do, that's great. That kind of guarantees that they have the exact image that you want. Then again, if you want to use Citrix, the only downside to that is you're buying a separate product, and it is sort of a little virtualization window in there. Maybe you want to share some resources, and that's possible to share local and ACE stuff, but then you're getting into more complexity. So again, I'm not saying that's bad. I'm saying that's sort of one way to do it. What Citrix decides to do is they say, you bring us whatever laptop, whatever you want, and basically if you make the cut, then you're in, and if not, then you're out. So again, not a good or bad thing necessarily. And that, by the way, of course, has its own complexity because you have to decide what makes the cut and how far you let people in. And maybe if they have virus software but not the recent updates, then you put them on a little VLAN and get the updates. There's all these complexities, of course, with everything. The point is, it kind of comes down to sort of a philosophical thing as far as what you want to do with that. Questions or thoughts so far?
But the image, if the computer does not belong to the company, is that something you install on the machine, or is it running in the memory? Where image and CD, where does it install on?
So ACE can go both ways, I think, right? I mean, you can boot that off a CD directly, or no?
No, ACE has to be installed on the PC or workstation. ACE includes the package. It includes the runtime, which looks like kind of a media player, and then the ACE virtual machine itself. So what's interesting is that it wouldn't be appropriate for a kiosk scenario, which Citrix would then solve, you know, because you have the Java ICA client, probably for a kiosk scenario.
Well, yeah, and
the gateway, so.
And one of the other things too, it's interesting is a lot of ways. I really go back and forth on this because my personal feeling is when VMware says, look, we can give you an ACE environment and you know it's totally isolated, totally secure, I mean, I feel that's something we can do with Citrix anyway. Because we can use Citrix to not have drive mapping, not have cut and paste integration, not have, you know, all this kind of stuff to sort of protect our network or our Citrix servers from our users. But the problem is we cannot protect our network from the users. So what I mean by that is, yeah, I can make it so my ICA session is pretty rock solid and there's definitely nothing that's going to happen to that. But what happens if the person has all the hacker tools on their environment and on their laptop and they try to use those against the network? Well, now we're talking about whether it's network access protection or stuff that Microsoft is doing or Cisco is doing, or perhaps maybe the public network or the wireless network the consultants plug into is just a VLAN and there only is one port to it, like a Citrix Access Gateway, which a lot of people are using this actually, are using Citrix Access Gateways internally, that they're building like a multi-tiered, you know, we always think of DMZs as protecting from the outside in, but if you have stray consultants walking around your building, you're also protecting sort of from the inside to the servers themselves. And they can sort of authenticate to make sure that, yeah, go ahead and let the users have whatever hacker tools they want, because maybe, you know, every port on your network is just a VLAN directed to that firewall, and then they can't do anything anyway. So again, these are just all sorts of things you have to consider, not right or wrong, but it's definitely sort of different flavors and different ways to solve the same problem. Microsoft is building this moving forward. You know, as I said, this network access protection is being now built into Windows, I mean, this is Longhorn and beyond. Cisco has this built into their routers now. So this is one thing that will become sort of more and more prevalent in the next few years, and certainly there's many different ways to do that. Now, what's really interesting, I think, about this whole conversation too, is to kind of look forward a little bit. And, you know, I'm kind of keeping this conversation sort of virtualization, VMware-ish, because that's sort of the context of our whole talk today. But I gotta tell you, first of all, the whole concept of virtualization in general, I think is really, really solid. And I think the only people that don't like, I can think of 3.5 companies that don't like virtualization. HP, IBM, Dell, and Sun. And so,
Forget Intel.
What's that?
Don't forget Intel.
I guess it's fair to say Intel AMD also. Maybe those are like the 1-2 hits right there. Because, you know, I don't really believe in statistics, so I won't even make up a number, but I would bet if you walk into any data center right now, probably any of your data centers, if you could somehow look at aggregate CPU utilization on your servers, what's it going to be? Maybe like 20%? It's not going to be very high. And what's crazy to me, I mean, you know, I always sort of like, I love the independent, screw the man kind of thing. And so, like, I think it's total BS that, like, Microsoft makes us, I don't blame Microsoft, but so the architecture of the industry is like, I got three servers, right? A web server, an email server, and a database server. And my, those servers are all twiddling their thumbs all day long, like cruising at 5%. And then I get slash dotted, and my web server spikes 100% and is dropping connections, while my database server is just sitting there twiddling its thumbs, and my email server is sitting there twiddling its thumbs. Maybe it's working 10% now because of all the emails I'm getting from people saying, hey, your website's down. But so the thing is, my solution for that is to buy another web server and then like, cluster and load balance, all that kind of stuff, which Microsoft and Intel and Dell and all these guys, they're all for that. And I think it's total crap that, like, why can't my database server get off its ass and help my web server a little bit, just for a few minutes, just for a day or two, and then go back to being a full-time database server once my thing goes off the bottom. So, I mean, of course, the reason for this is just the way that sort of the whole distributed computing model has sort of evolved over the years anyway. And so, you know, I don't want to blame any vendors for this. It's just kind of the way it is. But I think that, in my mind, virtualization is sort of the salvation for that. And this is definitely an iteration. It's going to happen over a few years. But you know, it's certainly going in that direction. Take a look at like what VMware is doing with the future stuff. So we know about vMotion, how you can move live servers. And by the way, what was mentioned earlier, how you can move live Citrix sessions from one physical server to another physical server. The only way to do that today is with vMotion and VMware. Every other solution that can sort of migrate sessions has to drop the session, disconnect, reconnect, everything. If you want to migrate live users, vMotion is the only way to do that. And of course, this is not just live Citrix users, but live database sessions and web users and all this other kind of stuff. So what's kind of interesting about that is that we look in the future, if we can sort of, I don't know how you want to describe it exactly, if we can have intelligence to be able to sort of migrate things on demand, or grow and shrink on demand, you can sort of start to see how we can move in that direction, especially as Windows becomes more modular. And so I'm not sure how much you've looked at the architecture of Longhorn. I'm not even talking about Thermal Server. I mean Longhorn's architecture itself. It will be very modular. The install process for Longhorn like takes 10 or 15 minutes, and then all the modules you have kind of snap in as almost like wholly bundled packages. Not really in a Softricity package or MSI package kind of way, but it's sort of like you plug in individual modules, such that it should be very easy for one Windows server that has sort of the SQL database module snapped in to be able to go ahead and grab the IIS module, snap it in there, act as an IIS server for a little bit, and then pop it back out again.
Like Novell NLMs.
Oh my gosh, I mean, like, where do you begin? Because like this is not new ideas, it's
right.
New for Windows. So, so what's interesting for this is that I think VMware is, when we talk about sort of what VMware is doing and with Microsoft and kind of future, this is key. You know, as someone mentioned earlier today that, and I don't know if you saw this in the news, it was only a couple weeks ago, if that even, where Microsoft, the virtual server product for Microsoft, that's a dead product. And they're completely, which was only released a year ago maybe, they're completely going back to the drawing board and rebuilding it so it runs a sort of Windows microkernel, much like the VM kernel from VMware, and then has different virtual machines and guest operating systems in that. So you know Microsoft is going in that direction. You know VMware is going to be going in that direction too, because that's kind of the mentality what people are sort of thinking about. So what's interesting is this whole virtualization thing, we can actually think about virtualization at a lot of different levels. This is thinking about virtualization at the operating system level. So what I mean by that is we have a Longhorn era operating system, and all the modules and applications can kind of be snapped in and sort of enabled and disabled on demand. And Microsoft, I mean, there's a lot coming there. You know, they can do a lot more on demand right now. Like you can install service packs now without reboots. I mean, so they're coming a long way in that direction. So that's virtualization at the operating system level. What's interesting, though, is there's other ways we can do virtualization. How many people have heard of a company called eGenera? Is anyone using eGenera currently in their environments? They have an office out here. don't know which direction is which, west of here by the airport or just down the corridor. It's EGENERA, EGENERA. EGENERA is a hardware manufacturer. So they make physical hardware. You buy EGENERA boxes. What they have, they make blade systems. Everyone here, of course, is familiar with traditional blades, where a blade is a computer in a different shape. With EGENERA, their blades have just processor and memory on them, nothing else. That's it. So you buy a chassis, you plug in as many blades and as much RAM as you want. And then their management environment allows you to cut that environment up into as many sort of virtual pieces of hardware as you want. And they're Windows 2000 certified, Windows 2003 certified. So you can actually install Windows 2003 directly on their blades. What's cool with this is that, so let's say I have this environment and I buy a rack of, like, they use Intel and AMD processors, you know, I buy 16 Xeon processors and 64 gigs of RAM. I can use the EGENERA software and hardware to cut that up into as many, I don't know if you want to call it, it's virtual, but it's kind of physical, you know. What the VM kernel is doing in a VMware environment is what EGENERA is doing within their sort of management box, because one of the plugs in your blade thing is like a little management card. They have, by the way, built this processor area network environment, so it actually shares memory buses, it shares processing between blades. And you want to talk about high density pins in their blades, you know, like, I don't know how many connectors, there's like 1,000 connectors in each blade. When you plug chassis together, it looks like it's just like a fine, I can't even describe like how skinny their pins are, there's so many in there. But my point with this, though, is that, so with EGENERA, it's very interesting because if you need, so you sort of build your data center in an EGENERA box. If you need more processing resources or more memory or whatever, just plug in another blade. And then cut that processor up and give some of it to computer A and some to computer B and some to C and some to D and that kind of thing. So EGENERA is very interesting. It's actually interesting because EGENERA to me, you know, I don't know that they necessarily sort of compete with VMware. It's a very interesting complement technology, I think. I would say, by the way, if EMC, who bought VMware, if they also bought EGENERA, there's a place to put in your resume. I don't think that would be very cool. But my point with this is that with EGENERA and what they offer, and again, the reason I kind of talk about them so much is they're the only ones who I know of who are actually doing the virtualization at the hardware level. So they're solving the same problem that Microsoft is doing at the operating system level, that VMware is doing at the virtual machine level. What's very interesting with this conversation is imagine an environment where all the hardware can sort of share all the resources. And so VMware does stuff like managing the scheduling and managing access to the PCI bus and the ports and the memory architecture and all that kind of stuff. So now I kind of have any operating system can sort of run on any hardware. And so I've got all my virtualization kind of taken care of at that level. We also need to think about our applications. So it's very interesting because, of course, at the end of the day, our jobs exist because of our applications. The hardware and the OS and all that kind of stuff is sort of just means to the end because our users want access to our applications. So when you look at virtualization at the application level, of course, now Citrix offers this application isolation environments. I don't know if you caught that when Frank was talking about it, if anyone's played with that, AIE. Citrix Presentation Server 4 has an application isolation environment that allows you to install applications that normally conflict with each other onto a same server. That is not application virtualization, though. It does not virtualize anything. What it does, it redirects the file system, redirects the registry. This is just like, has anyone ever used the substitution command, SUBST, if you have maybe an application is hard-coded to the C drive? So within every single session of your Citrix server, you have a logon script that substitutes that back to a user's home drive. That's basically what AIE is doing. They wrapped around a lot of smarts around that and tied it into the registry and that kind of stuff. And AIE is brilliant, but it is not virtualization. Now, of course, Softricity has application virtualization. And I'm not sure if anyone here is current Softricity customers or familiar with Softricity. Softricity is a software company. And what Softricity does is they have a product that allows you to install your applications, and it will package up your applications into one sort of single file executable. I'm kind of simplifying this, but basically these single file executable application packages live back on a big Softricity database. And then you have maybe 100 front-end metaframe servers, and each metaframe server that needs to run an application can grab that application image from that Flextricity database and run it on its own server. What happens here is the Flextricity environment, it is a layer that sits in between the application and the Windows operating system. And it virtualizes the registry, it virtualizes COM objects, it virtualizes the file system, it virtualizes DLL registrations, it virtualizes all this kind of stuff. So that each application thinks it's the only application running in an environment. And so what happens, you can have one server with this little Flextricity agent running multiple versions of Access, multiple versions of JRE, multiple, just all this kind of stuff. And so Flextricity, basically, if you can get your application to run in the Flextricity environment, it can run on anything. Flextricity actually has Windows XP agents too. So you can maybe make an Outlook image and deploy Outlook to all your users, desktop, server, Citrix, everywhere via that. So Flextricity gives us this virtualization at the application level. Now, where this is kind of interesting, where it's kind of relevant here, so now we're talking about virtualized hardware and virtualized operating systems and virtualized applications and all this kind of stuff. Of course, if you buy all this stuff, you know, I mean, you're gonna spend $1 million for, you know, all these different technologies. So I'm not trying to suggest that you sort of need all these different technologies. But what's interesting to think about is, I think, number one, virtualization is not going anywhere. And I think what we're gonna see, not going anywhere, I mean, it's not going away. it's going somewhere in the terms of, I think that year over year, we're gonna see more and more, to where it becomes sort of the de facto standard. I mean, Windows virtualizes a lot of stuff right now anyway, because, you know, sort of a bus is a bus, a processor is a processor, the HAL takes care of this stuff. We're just seeing that going up a level. And so I think the fact that Microsoft is kind of retooling their virtual server software really kind of is a testament to what Microsoft thinks the direction is moving into. So we talked about virtualization and all this kind of stuff. So how does Citrix fall into this? What's very interesting is you could almost say that Citrix kind of virtualize their applications, at least from the perspective of the user, in the sense that it sort of doesn't matter where the application is running or where the where the presentation server is located. We're able to access and use that application kind of no matter where it is. And they have different ways to make sure it's secure and it's performant and all that kind of stuff. So what's interesting about this is that as we're moving forward and looking at what the hardware and OS vendors are doing with virtualization, we also kind of have to keep in mind of what Citrix is doing and what we can sort of do to make our environments sort of virtual. I mean, like I said, you could argue that as soon as you started using Citrix, that was your first step towards a virtualized environment to begin with. I've actually used that. If you have to sort of like sell it upstream, this whole virtualization thing, you kind of say, hey, we've been using this for, you know, 10 years or whatever. So it's kind of interesting. Like I said, this time, right now, this is your time. So
hey, Brian,
whatever you want to discuss is what we'll talk about.
Have you ever played around with Vista, the new RDP clients and enhancements of RDP or the terminal services in Vista?
Okay, so there's a couple interesting things. So Vista, Longhorn, next version of Windows. Let's talk quickly about this. Microsoft is working on enhancements to the terminal service product and to the RDP protocol. And so there's a lot of information out there about what Microsoft is doing and new features and everything. And I guess, so I should first say, everything I'm talking about now is kind of speculation, right? You can go back and read my site, read old articles, and see what I've written about in the past to decide my track record of whether my speculation is correct or not.
What's your website?
BrianMadden.com. Microsoft is building into the Vista, the next version of Windows. They're going to build a lot of features that we get with Citrix today. They're going to give you seamless Windows. They're going to give you application publishing. They're going to give you a sort of a portal way to access your applications. They're going to give you sort of a single server proxy that allows you to sort of proxy RDP in, so we can have sort of one head-end server, like a Citrix Secure Gateway, one head server to support multiple back-end servers. What's interesting, you know, and this, 2 years ago when we started talking about this is that bear paw stuff, by the way, that came out a few years ago. When we started talking about this a few years ago, everyone at Citrix kind of flipped out and was like, oh, you know, I mean, like, what's this mean? And people were like, oh, do I even need Citrix anymore? I'm not going to buy Citrix, it's away from Microsoft, and all this kind of stuff. The reality is this. So Citrix has always built enhancements on top of Microsoft technologies. In 1998, when Citrix released MetaFrame 1.0, they did just that. You know, in 1998, It was the ICA protocol versus the RDP protocol. Remember the very first version of RDP? 256 color only, 800 by 600 only, no sound, no clipboard, no shadowing, no printing, crappy performance, all this stuff. And so Citrix offered all these things on top of that. And now today's RDP protocol, RDP 5.2 with Windows 2003, performance-wise is identical to ICA. And you know, I will fight to the death to defend that. As far as, yes, anecdotally, I can show you tests where ICA wins, I can show you tests where RDP wins, it really doesn't matter. Architecturally, they're identical. ICA and RDP are the same. So much that Citrix actually admits this themselves, because if you connect to a Citrix server with the RDP protocol, you're still taking a connection license. You can now connect via web interface via RDP. Citrix realizes that ICA is not their sort of core intellectual property anymore. Citrix has intelligence in other places. So Citrix had all these great ICA features, and Microsoft caught up with RDP. So what happened now in the past few years, so why do people use Citrix today? Well, the whole Microsoft Terminal Services versus Citrix, it's not about numbers of users, it's do you need a web interface? Do you need seamless windows? Do you need published applications? Do you need the secure gateway? Do you need intelligent load balancing? These are all the features that Citrix offers, let's say in the 2003-2004 timeframe. So now, Vista from Microsoft, Longhorn, when it's released, the server is going to be after the client, by the way. So I think we're looking at 2007 for server. We're still 2 years down the road, but in 2 years from now, Microsoft will offer all those things that Citrix sort of offers today. But of course, Citrix is kind of taking it to the next level beyond that. And so one of the things that Citrix has that people don't realize, I think is very key, this whole sort of workspace control, smooth roaming kind of thing, like where I can log on to any workstation, get all my applications connected right back in, my whole environment. I can lock it, walk back over here, connect back in. This is the kind of stuff. Citrix is smart access technology. I'm not sure if anyone's really dug into smart access technology. This is something that Frank mentioned. These are products that are real from Citrix today. The smart access technology is when you're using this Citrix Access Gateway, it can actually look at your client device and tell you not just what applications you can access, but also what you can do within those applications. It actually ties into the presentation server policies that are stored in the data store. So I can say, same IP address, same username, same everything, but if I authenticate, maybe if I'm using a domain resource, a computer that's a member of a domain, maybe I can do drive mapping, or maybe I can use cut and paste. If I connect from my grandmother's iMac, maybe I can use the same applications. It's just that when I launch those applications, it doesn't give me the cut and paste capability. Or perhaps it does an analysis to say, is my virus software running on the client device? If yes, you get drive access. If no, you don't get drive access. This is technology that's real today. And not a lot of people are using it because it's fairly new. It was released in last couple months. But this is very, very compelling, because it's not just about do you have access to which programs you see. Of course I can do that. Maybe if you're outside the firewall, then you do not get to see the patient management system. Or maybe it's two-factor authentication. If you two-factor authenticate, you get all your applications plus some extra special ones, and if you don't, you get others. But this is not just about which applications people have access to, it's also about once they launch those applications, what can they do within there in terms of Citrix capabilities. So this is another sort of for instance of what Citrix is doing on top of what Microsoft will do in the Vista timeframe. Another thing, so Citrix bought NetScaler. I don't know, has anyone heard of NetScaler? The first day I heard about them was when Citrix bought them. So NetScaler makes hardware appliances. They have many hardware appliances. I mean, some of NetScaler's appliances are these $100,000 boxes that aggregate and accelerate busy
eBay.
Traffic. eBay, MSN, Google, Amazon, these guys. But NetScaler goes all the way down. NetScaler has SSL VPNs, just like Citrix's secure access gateway, what they got from Net6. NetScaler also has intelligent load balancers. NetScaler also has packet shaping type devices such as Packeteer. This is actually interesting. This is kind of speculation, something we're talking about at lunch today. Is anyone here using Packeteer or any of these other sort of traffic shaping devices that are out there where they can sort of look at all your traffic and prioritize ICA traffic? So maybe ICA has higher priority than pornography and MP3 downloads. And so the thing about that though is they can move ICA relative to other protocols. But they cannot actually break into the ICA protocol itself and tear it apart and say, okay, graphics traffic has high priority, cut and paste traffic has low priority, and printing is super low priority, or printing is high. They cannot do it at that level because Citrix has not opened up the ICA protocol specification and it's encrypted, and so Packeteer just can't do it. But now Citrix just bought a company that does that kind of stuff. So you can bet that at some point in the future, we're going to see packet shaping devices from Citrix. These are still going to be hardware devices, but devices that if you use this and you use the ICA protocol, then we can do very intelligent things with the ICA traffic and really cut into individual ICA packets and actually directly affect the ICA protocol stream. So these are the kinds of value that Citrix is going to add, so much so that when Vista comes out and Microsoft releases to the world their seamless Windows and all stuff, Citrix will be sort of, again, one step ahead. And I'm sure that Microsoft will have these capabilities in another 5 years, and then Citrix will be, again, kind of one step ahead. One last thing I'll say, and this is kind of a big topic, but I want to kind of mention this quickly. I think it's worth saying that when we're talking about terminal server capabilities in the Vista / Longhorn timeframe, we also have to look at the fact that terminal server and Citrix presentation server are definitely changing in terms of their use in the world. I don't mean by who's using them, but I mean how the technologies are run. Terminal server today, and by extension Citrix and the ICA protocol, are based on a screen scrape technology. What I mean by that is that you've got a terminal server or a Citrix server in the back end. There's sort of a virtualized frame buffer. Whatever goes on that frame to the screen is scraped down. Those pixels are compressed, sent to the client, and the client paints the pixels back on the screen. This is why, for example, if you have the Luna interface, which is that cool blue, curvy, bubbly, bubblegum interface on Windows XP, on your client workstation, but you do not have that on your server, a lot of the boxes and menus will look like the server's version, not the client's version. Now, some things like pop-up boxes and like the window borders are actually rendered by the ICA client processor locally, which is why they look local. But many of those, it's just scraping whatever it sees on the screen and sends it down to you. What's very interesting is that in the future, Microsoft will be changing the way that terminal services send screen information down to client devices. One of the keys of Longhorn and Vista is this thing called Avalon. Avalon is the new graphics engine for Windows. And the Avalon graphics engine, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it, but basically what we're going to see is that future terminal server versions will be able to say, you know what? What is a Windows application? A Windows application says, I need a text box that's 80 pixels by 50 pixels and says stop with an OK button on it. It throws it out to the Microsoft Windows Manager. The Window Manager figures out what color schemes you have and physically paints the pixels on the screen. Then the pixels are scraped down, sent to your client device, and repainted on the screen. Well, couldn't we just kind of take a shortcut? Why not, when we're doing our remote terminal server work, why bother like rendering that on the server, then scraping it, and then taking it down? If I've got instructions right here that say, I need a message box, give me an OK button, why not just grab those directly and send it right down to the client device itself? Better bandwidth, better efficiency of resources on the server, and the box then looks like the box should look on a client workstation. So if you have a pink bubblegum box on your client, it's going to draw it as a pink bubblegum box. A Mac client will look like a Mac. Windows client will look like a Windows. So what we're saying is this remoting, what they call it in terminal server world, is we can do it at this sort of, they call it the GDI level. We can do it a level lower. Instead of waiting for the frame buffer to paint that to the frame, let's look at the instructions that are being put on the frame and grab those. I mean, this is, of course, anyone who's been around for X Windows. I mean, we've been doing this for, not we've been doing this, but people have been doing this for a long, long time. What's interesting with this, if you think about grabbing these raw instructions and sending them down to the client device, what else does that sound like? I don't know, web browsing, anyone? Right, what is a web browser? HTML is instructional code of, I want a box and I want an OK button. Macintosh Safari renders it like a Safari, Windows renders it like Windows, proper colors, all this kind of stuff. So what's very interesting with this, if you start to think of it like that, now we can start to see some evolution. Because the whole notion of a Windows application versus a web application, that's going away. The lines are blurring. And what I mean by this is that we're already starting to see this with true .NET applications, where they can be one-click, drag-and-drop deployment for anywhere and all this kind of stuff. So what's very interesting is that as .NET applications continue to be more prolific, and as Windows can then sort of remote these at a different level, it's very interesting. A terminal server and an IIS server start to look pretty similar. As a matter of fact, and I'll say today, I've said this before, I'll make the absolute prediction that terminal server and IIS will merge into one single product. My guess is they call it application server, or actually presentation server is a great name for it. But I mean, really, the name presentation server, that's a good name. But because, think of IIS. IIS is applications that are running on a remote web server, and it's just taking these applications, sending down the instructions for the screenshot, and letting our client device do this. Think of this in terms of virtualization also. Because now I've got a little bit of application here, a little bit there, a little bit here. Take the store, like brianmadden.com/store, where we like sell DVDs and books and that kind of stuff. It's a web application running on our server. You type in your credit card number. It uses an XML web service to go to our credit card processor, approve the card, get the code back. Once it does that, then it also uses another XML web service to send it to our fulfillment company, which actually just went bankrupt last week. And so now I've got all this inventory like back in my house. So all via XML. And the thing is, so I've got, I left out a step. It also goes to UPS, FedEx, and US Postal Service, via postal APIs, shows the actual shipping rates for like the actual shipping to you, chooses it, then credit card process. So we've got my server plus three different outsourced, you know, shipping and fulfillment and credit card processing. That application is a sort of good candidate for virtualization because the application itself is kind of being broken up and put into different places. So, but anyway, so if terminal server and IIS merge into this single sort of Microsoft presentation server or whatever it would be called, where is that going for Citrix and all this kind of stuff and Microsoft and everything? What's very interesting, and I'll leave with this, the power we can get from this is now take Citrix's access approach and applaud the Citrix for like keeping one marketing campaign for longer than 2 years. So take Citrix's access approach, look at what Citrix is doing with smooth roaming, and think of how we can apply that to a Microsoft presentation server environment. Let's say I've got my session, let's say I've got a Microsoft Vista Longhorn Era desktop. I connect it via RDP or ICA or whatever, you know, who cares. I use my remote applications. My remote server recognizes, hey, I have a Vista Longhorn client engine. I can send down just the raw primitives, the behind the scenes information, and let it draw the Windows itself. Fine. I get in the car, I grab my PDA, I'm running Windows, you know, mobile or whatever. I connect back into my environment, it connects me back into my desktop. And you know now, the roaming, when you roam from device to device, it will renegotiate your encryption settings and screen resolutions and all this kind of stuff, color depths. So now I connect to my handheld device, maybe my computer at home, maybe a Macintosh, and it says, I'm connecting to my old session, but it realizes my client device does not have capabilities to render these Vista objects primitives themselves. So instead what happens is it goes back to sort of screen scrape mode for my session and sends those screens down to me. Then I go to another Vista device and I can roam, and the intelligence built into this protocol can actually be managed on a device-by-device level. Two more quick points I'll make about this, they're kind of cool food for thought. One. Part of this whole Vista, Avalon, presentation layer stuff is that applications are no longer being drawn in terms of pixels. They're being drawn in terms of screen size. It's all vector-based graphics. I mean, they're still going to have bitmap images and all this kind of stuff. But what's interesting is you can actually, with Longhorn, take a copy of Word and like shrink the window down to half size, and everything shrinks down. Like the words get smaller, the menus get smaller, the scroll bar gets narrower. It looks like zooming out. And so you can keep your Outlook running at like quarter size, kind of off on the side, full window, just quarter screen. As we get higher dot pixel density on monitors, this will get even cooler. And like biometric implants in our eyes so we can actually read the tiny things. But so what's interesting with this though, is that, so now our applications can have some intelligence where they can actually know what size screen they're operating on. So you know how Outlook, or any Windows application, Word, if you grab the corner of Word and shrink it down, certain icons start disappearing off the toolbar. Imagine that kind of stuff. Anyone here use like a PDA with Pocket Outlook, with Pocket Word on it, or Pocket Outlook? Why does Pocket Outlook exist? Pocket Outlook exists because if I use real Outlook via Citrix on this thing, I can't see what I'm doing. It's either zoomed way out with low resolution or pan and scan, and I have to like move around, and it's a pain in the butt to use real Outlook on here. So Microsoft wrote a special version of Outlook that's built for a 160 by 160 pixel screen. Well, what if the version of Outlook that we're running was smart enough to have some intelligence to look at the end user device that's using and can say, aha, you know what? I'm not being presented on a 160 by 160 screen. I'm going to reconfigure myself for that sort of screen. As connectivity becomes more ubiquitous, and as Citrix becomes more ubiquitous, this is what we're going to see. So we have not only the intelligence to figure out how we draw the characters, are we sending screen scrapes or are we sending web scrapes or backend stuff, but we'll also be able to reposition itself and say, aha, I should show this information or that information. One last thing I'll mention, again, kind of in food for thought for the future. The other advantage we have of this sort of transferring sort of backend raw, like primitives type information, is now we can have intelligent remote to local application integration. So has anyone ever used Outlook through Citrix? If you get a new mail message, it puts the little mail icon in your system tray, or maybe it fades up the thing when it's coming on or coming off, but it does that in a screen scraping kind of way also. Well, what's very interesting is Longhorn and Vista is having, it's a more formalized alert system. So instead of all these little bubbles and pop-ups and event logs and system trays and flashing and all this kind of stuff, there's one sort of single alert engine that manages alerts within the Longhorn environment. Well, now what's interesting with this is instead of having like an alert engine running locally on my client device and an alert engine running remotely on my server and then scraping my remote alerts and sending them down to me locally, we can actually say, hey, you know what? I see there's a local alert engine running. Why not just grab the actual XML metadata that is that alert itself, shoot that down to the client, where the client device can consume that alert as a sort of proper way. So now we can see local and remote applications. I mean, today we integrate local and remote applications by cutting and pasting, or maybe drive sharing. That's about it. But now we can see remote applications actually sending intelligent data down to our client devices that our client devices can act upon. So if you're running out of drive space on your, your quota is running out on your Citrix server, it doesn't pop up a warning on the server's event log and that sends it to you. It actually sends that data down to you where a client device can do that. And then you can set all sorts of different thresholds, like if I'm at a full desktop, send me only level 5 and higher, and if I'm a, Palm device, give me only level 1 and all this kind of stuff. So these are just kind of interesting things to think about. The good news, though, is this technology will continue to evolve, and it will continue to evolve in a very cool way. What I mean is I used to think, okay, Citrix and Terminal Server are cool today, but what happens when the whole world goes to .NET? I'm going to have to, learn Exchange or something. But now I feel very strongly that by looking at where things are going with virtualization, by looking at where things are going with Bearpaw and Vista and remoting at different levels, this technology, the ability to access applications, that's not going anywhere. And these technologies, Citrix, Microsoft, VMware, all the partners, there's definitely a big part in that for everyone. So that's why I'm happy about the future. The end.
Today's show was originally recorded on August 18th, 2005. Its contents are copyrighted by the Brian Madden Company. Our theme music was composed by Jack Madden. Thanks for listening.